Hey guys, welcome back to Jewels on the Hustle. Today I have a very exciting guest, someone that I've wanted to have on for some time now, because not only was she a pro tennis player, she is using the skills that she got as a pro tennis player and transitioning them right into the workforce at the Daily Caller in DC. I always have been a firm believer that tennis teaches you skills that you can't learn in an internship or a classroom, and Shelby perfectly will explain how this applies oh so well and how tennis players, athletes in general, just have a leg up, in my opinion, in any workforce or media company environment they immerse themselves in. So I'm so excited to have Shelby on. I may be biased, but I think athletes got the full package, whether it's on the tennis court, in the sport they play, or in the workforce. So without further ado, Shelby Talcott. Okay, Shelby Talcott, how was quarantine for you? I know we're a little bit past that now, but were you in D.C. or in New York?
I was in New York for like right before quarantine, and then I came back to D.C. and I quarantined in D.C. We started working remotely, and it was kind of tough because, it's weird. You can't go anywhere. You can't really work out. The gym's all closed down. And, you know, being a former athlete, that was tough for me. So I had to run a lot, which I hate. So, but got through it, you know.
Yeah. How did you like working remotely as opposed to maybe working in an office or on streets?
At first, it was kind of fun because I actually liked sort of being able to have my own schedule and stuff like that, but very quickly got a little bit boring.
Makes sense. It's amazing. Like, as tennis players, we're so used to, like, having something going on every second. And then even, like, as a reporter, I'm sure you're super busy. And so once you're in quarantine, it's like, oh my gosh, like, I actually have time to sit with my thoughts and I have to like fill up my time. Did you pick up any new skills?
Well, I got better at long distance running, so I guess that's something, but I was so busy because I'm, you know, a reporter, and with COVID, there was so many news stories every day. Mm-hmm. So I kind of just started working a lot more.
Oh, so you were very busy working. So you probably didn't have that much time to, like, pick up all those cooking skills and stuff like that?
Yeah, exactly. I was working a lot.
So in February of 2019, about, you decided it was time to hang up the rackets. You moved from New York to D.C. Can you, like, talk about that transition from tennis to media? When did you, like, discover your passion for media?
I was really good at writing, like, all growing up, and so I kind of knew if I wanted to do something that I liked doing, it would be involving writing, whatever that may be. And when I started playing tennis, I got a little bit better idea because I was starting to travel more, and I really liked traveling and hearing other people's stories. And then when I went to college, that kind of just expanded on itself at Iowa. And so I got a journalism degree, and after I turned pro and decided to hang up the rackets, like you said, I moved to DC pretty quickly, got a job, and it was tough. It was really good, but it was tough for me because I was so used to, like, working out 8 hours a day and having such a different lifestyle that I sort of went to the other extreme. Like, I didn't work out at all and, like, you know, didn't eat that healthy. So that was tough. For a little bit, for sure. But I really liked sort of being able to be, you know, a regular person and starting my career in journalism, which I always knew I wanted to do after tennis.
It's interesting for us, like, we both loved tennis and we still love tennis, and then we're also both passionate about media. When we used to practice together, I feel like 50% of the time was just chatting about stuff and learning about each other and, you know, talking about things. But then obviously the other half was playing tennis. I feel like there was always more to us than like the tennis player side. So I just always find that fascinating. And as far as like working out less and eating less healthy, like I couldn't relate more. With my injury, I went through a phase of like not being motivated to work out at all. And I felt like because we burned so many calories in tennis, our bodies like didn't know how to burn calories without tennis. And you know, it was awful. So you said you're picking up more long distance running. You ran a marathon, is that right?
Yeah, I ran a marathon. I ran the Marine Corps marathon last year, which was crazy because I was not in shape to run it and I had not like trained properly for it, but I did it and I finished it, which is good. I'm actually running another one again in 2021. So hopefully I'll be more prepared this time because I'm actually in better shape. I sort of got it together. Speaking of 2020, yeah, and started eating healthier and working out more. And it's good. It's like you need something like that still, especially if you used to be an athlete. I feel like you can't just stop everything.
100%. So I saw on social media that your brother is quite the runner. Now, how many miles did he run a few months ago?
Yeah, he ran 50 miles for charity at William & Mary. It was for the Children's Hospital there. So I ran a few with him. We actually went, and he was supposed to do a proper race, but it got canceled because of COVID. So we went to William & Mary, a few of us, and made signs and like just kind of fake made a race for him. We had like a little finish time line. We found some police line tape. So I ran a few miles with him. We took turns. Like my mom ran a few miles. They had this older man who is a funder for William & Mary for the track team. He ran a bunch of miles with Aiden. But yeah, Aiden did the full 50, which was impressive.
50 miles like without a break for him?
No, so he'd do like at the beginning, I think he was doing like 4 or 5 miles and then he'd take a drink.
Okay.
And 4 or 5 miles. And then once it got like towards the finish line, I think he was getting really obviously tired. So he would take pretty much like every mile, he would take a quick sip. And, yeah. You know, it wasn't really necessarily for the time, but more for like, I'm going to finish 50 miles for charity.
Yeah, I feel like if you're
going. Although he did have a pretty good time, so.
Yeah, I loved the signs and the support. I mean, if you're doing 50 miles, it can't be for time. Like, wow. Like, definitely about, like, exactly. Just saying you completed it is, like, a huge accomplishment. To do that in one day, I don't think I've ran 50 miles, like, in, like, 6 months.
Yeah.
So people say that, you know, when you're an athlete, you acquire skills that like you cannot pick up, whether it's like an internship or in another job or just in a classroom. What skills do you think translated from your tennis career to being a media reporter right now?
For sure, work ethic. I'm not saying you can't pick up work ethic if you're not an athlete, but I do think there's just like a different level of whether it's work ethic or like that drive to sort of be the best and, you know, succeed. It's just different, I feel like, when you're an athlete. And that translates a ton for media and for really any job you do, right? So my big thing when I got a job was, like, maybe at my age I don't have the traditional resume that other people have, but if you hire me, I'm going to be the hardest worker you hire. And, like, you know what I mean? And
yeah.
I think it taught me how to take criticism and realize, I think a lot of people, especially our age, kind of take criticism and they shut down. You know what I mean?
100%.
And so I think being an athlete taught me, like, I want criticism. You know what I mean? I want, because if I do something perfectly, that means I can't improve on it, which means I'm at my peak. And who wants to be at their peak in their 20s?
Hello, my hustlers. Boy, do I have some great news for you. So the other day I was practicing with this girl and her eyelash falls off mid-practice. That's right, her lash popped off. And I thought, Julia, what are you going to do? And that's when I turned to Play Your Court, because you get to play more tennis and improve your game while the tennis is brought to you. You get set up with practice partners nearby that are similar in level. So that's right for all you lazy folks thinking, I don't want to drive far to practice. Well, no excuses. You get unlimited matches, no drama, and custom video coaching tailored to your needs. So let's say you're having a hard time with your forehand inside out, or you serve, Play Your Court has you set. And you actually end up saving more because you get insider pricing on balls, rackets, grips, shoes, string, bags, apparel, pro tickets, and more from the top tennis brands. All you have to do is go to playyourcourt.com and answer a few easy questions about what you are looking for. Use my code, you're welcome, capital Julia, J-U-L-I-A, all caps, and you get 50% off your yearly subscription of $49.99. And just monthly, you can get it for $5.99. Again, you're welcome. Follow them on Instagram and Twitter at Play Your Court and their YouTube page, Play Your Court. You are welcome. Ball out, guys.
Sort of all that, it all just revolves around like your work and how willing you are to make mistakes and then learn from them and then get better and ask people for advice. I think that's really helped me as I've started my journalism career.
And especially, I feel like time management as college student athletes, you know, you wake up at the crack of dawn and you have to fit in all your studying and then classes and practice and fitness. And it's just like a jam-packed schedule. So if you can handle being a college student athlete, I feel like you can handle a lot of things. And that's something like a normal student would never have to go through.
Yeah, for sure. That's a big one too.
So did you feel like the Daily Caller was very appreciative of those skills and definitely saw that in you right away, that you would make it like an immediate impact?
Yeah, I think, I like to think they did. I started as a fellow on one side of the company, and then pretty quickly after 6 months, I moved over to like a full-time sort of, it was full-time, but it was a, mm-hmm. A 2-year position as opposed to this. I think that they recognize I work really hard. Actually, I've been told to like take a break and like, make sure I'm like doing things for myself. So
I feel like as tennis players, we're like really eager and like not like aggressive in a sense, but like it's just because in tennis it's an individual sport. If you're not like that, we wouldn't be where we were as players. So I think those are also skills that translate. See, I wanted to have you on this so we can discuss like the skills that translate, because it's so like important and relevant. So I don't know if a lot of people listening to this podcast know, but a couple of months ago, so you've been covering DC. Well, no, you've been in DC, but you went to Portland for the protests in DC. You've been shot with rubber bullets, harassed on streets, tear gas, all that stuff. How would you describe those like experiences? That's so crazy.
We've been all over. As you know, there's protests and riots popping up all over the country. We were in DC, New York City, Portland, Seattle. Who knows where next? Yeah. So it's a crazy time to be a reporter. I feel like almost this is like my new sort of adrenaline rush instead of tennis. I really like going to them. I know the dangers. I was attacked by protesters a few months ago in DC and then actually handcuffed by police. So that was like crazy. But it's, you have to just be paying attention literally all the time. You have to be very careful about what you're recording, who you're recording, because like it or not, no matter what side you're on, these protesters and these rioters only want one side of the story to be getting out. So they want you to film police violence, and they do not want you to film anything between themselves that mm-hmm. they're doing illegally. But, you know, as a reporter, it's your job to get both sides of the story. And so that gets you into trouble. A lot of people don't like where we work necessarily. But it's overall, it's been great. I mean, I go home and I'm looking for the next place to pop up that we can be the first people out there on the ground reporting. I think, you know, we're bringing a lot to the table that other media companies aren't able to bring.
I remember the beginning of last year, we were both in a Caribbean island. I want to say like Guadeloupe or something like that. I asked you, Shelby, what's your favorite part of the pro tour? You're like, I love the travel. I love learning about new cultures, seeing new people. How would you describe like these experiences where you're reporting in dangerous areas versus maybe like in a third world country competing? Did you feel like you had to bring some of those skills over?
For sure. You know, I think it's more dangerous almost than these, mm-hmm. you know, sort of not nice areas that we've both been to, because the not nice areas, they have, you know, protection for you and they're prepared, and typically it's pretty safe, right? We go to tourist areas in these, you know, Egypt, Tunisia, these are like tourist areas. And then you get into these areas, I mean, in Seattle, there was no police. It was a no cop zone. So, and everybody had guns because it's an open carry state. So, you know, it's far more dangerous, but I think I've just learned through my travels how to be sort of street smart and sense when a situation's getting out of control to the point where, you know, I need to leave or, you know, back up a little bit. And so I think that's taught me sort of how to maneuver these really I don't want to say weird, these really like different areas that are popping up amid these protests where it really is dangerous because, you know, you're completely on your own. I mean, in Seattle, police would not respond to the area.
So really anything goes, whereas when you're at a tournament, you feel like you have some level of protection. I remember I went to a tournament in Caracas, Venezuela. I know it's like one of the most dangerous countries or cities in the whole entire world. I remember we were like escorted from the hotel, air quotes hotel, because it was, no offense, it was pretty not so nice. But we were escorted by like armed people. I was playing my match on a court, and like all around the court we had like people holding like guns and protection. So while that's crazy to experience while you're playing a tennis match, it's also, you kind of feel like a level of safety, whereas yeah, when you're doing what you do, it's like anything goes and you kind of have to, like you said, be very street smart.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So you went on air with Sean Hannity. That is super cool. He's such like a high profile person. Were you nervous? Like, I know when we're in a third set tiebreaker, it's pretty stressful. I'm sure that skill carried over, dealing with the nerves and high pressure moments.
Yeah, I mean, I am very good at a lot of things, but one thing I definitely am not an expert on is being on camera and being on camera live with like millions of people watching. So I was definitely nervous. Hannity was one of the first big like TV hits that I did. I had like one or two Fox hits before then, which were still like in the evening hours. So I was equally nervous. I think the more I've done it, like the last time I did Hannity compared to the first time, I was far more comfortable. I think it's just like tennis, you know, the more reps you do, the better you get. And it was nervous though, because in my view, I'm like, oh my gosh, everybody's watching this live. So if I mess up, everybody's going to see it. And I'm a media reporter, so it's my job to like write about when people mess up. So I'm like, there's other people out there who are like, you know, but also nobody knows what you're going to say. So
that's a very good point.
You know, nobody, it's just a conversation. And it's kind of easier to talk about these things like protests and riots because it's just based on what I've seen and what I know, as opposed to like I have to memorize a bunch of facts about some obscure topic.
That's a great point. You're talking about your experience of what you've seen rather than maybe reporting on what someone else said or interpreting something different. What I've noticed, like, on the tennis court, at first, not at first, but, like, for a long time, I was so worried about what spectators were seeing, like, if I had a really bad day. But then I realized most of these people, like, don't even play tennis that well. They think, like, just getting a ball over the net, like, is an accomplishment or, like, a good shot. Like, they don't know what good tennis versus bad tennis is. So it's, like, I hate the expression, like, imagine everyone wearing like underwear on their head. That never helped me. But I feel like putting myself in their shoes and being like, they don't know like good tennis, or like they probably stink at tennis. No offense, but that makes me feel better. But for you, it's like the people that are listening don't know what you're about to say, so you can kind of like make your way through in a sense.
Yeah.
Did you ever imagine that life would be like this? Like, you're kind of famous. That's pretty cool.
I definitely don't think I'm famous, but thank you. But, no, I mean, I always sort of had the goal to, like, separate myself from just being a you know, reporter who does print and just writes. And I sort of saw this opportunity. I didn't see this as an opportunity to, like, get on TV. I did see it as an opportunity. I've always wanted to cover protests and stuff like that. And then, so I saw it as an opportunity to just further what I'm good at.
Yeah, because first you were doing more like writing and print, right? So how did you make that transition to like on-air work?
Yeah, so it still goes back to that hard work thing, because I'm still writing a lot. So yeah. I sort of now have two jobs where I'm a media reporter, and then I'm also covering these protests and riots. And then if I get asked on TV, I do that. But it's with the expectation that I'm still doing my other stuff. So I've gotten like 10 times busier because it takes time. Like these TV hits, it's like takes a chunk out of your day because you need to get ready. The first time I was on TV, I was on the ground, so you're not supposed to like dress up, but I was wearing a baseball cap, and everybody made fun of me because I wore a baseball cap on TV.
That's
like, I don't know,
funny.
Like, I wear baseball caps all the time.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's been an interesting transition. It's good because I'm still furthering my writing and I still really like the media beat. So I'm trying to sort of do it all, which is tough, but.
Would you say you're going to stay with writing, or do you hope to one day transition fully to like on-air work?
Maybe eventually, but for the foreseeable future, I definitely want to still write. I love writing. I think I'm pretty good at it and I can get better. And I definitely want to keep writing. Like every time I go out to these protests and riots, I go home like in Portland, it was like 4 o'clock in the morning and I stayed up and I wrote like the wrap up of what had happened that night. And so
do you sleep? Like, I'm actually curious. I always see you, you know, so busy working, whether it's on social media or at like a protest or writing. Like, how many hours of sleep do you get a day?
My sleep schedule is not healthy, probably. So I try when I'm home to get like full night's sleep, but for example, I was in Portland, which is a 3-hour time difference, and we were staying up until 4 o'clock in the morning. For me, I was staying up till like 6 so I could go home and write. So it was like it was almost like I was in Europe, you know, like completely different time zone. And so then I go home and I am so like in the news still that I check online and I want to stay up to see what's going on in these places. And so it's kind of bad, and I don't sleep a ton. I wake up and I check my email. Probably a bad habit that I need to actually get better on, because it's, you know, sleep's important, as we know.
Yeah, it is important, but it's so tempting to, like you said, like check what's going on. Like, you report something and you want to be like, what are people saying? And I'm sure that's hard too. I'm sure, as you know, in tennis, we get a lot of negative feedback and hate mail. I'm sure you also get that in reporting. It's only normal. People are always trying to bring you down, unfortunately. Just the nature of the beast, I guess.
Yeah, people always have something to say, but...
Mm-hmm. Just to filter it out, I guess, and which you're definitely good at by now. Now, last question I have for you. Did any part of you ever want to be a sports reporter, or were you always like, I want to do news, world news, stuff like that?
I knew with my background in sports that if I needed to fall back on something, I could do sports reporting, and I would enjoy it. But for sure, my main goal was to get away from sports, I think, because I spent my whole life doing it at such a high level. I sort of needed a break. And so not really. I sort of knew, though, you know, if I can't get a job in journalism, politics related, I would fall back on the sports, which was kind of nice to know that, you know, worst comes to worst, I'm sure I could do it, and I wouldn't hate it. I would definitely enjoy it. I love sports, and I still love watching them and, you know, getting out there and compete and playing whatever it is. We had, like, a softball league last year, which was pretty different. I was like, wow, I'm really, like, not playing tennis anymore. But, yeah, I considered it, but it was never what I really wanted to do.
Yeah, actually, I wanted to ask you, do you have time to do things outside of work now, to have a normal life, you know, go out to dinners or see friends, do something fun?
Yeah, the good thing is a lot of the friends I have here in D.C. are also fellow reporters, or they work in the Hill, or they work in the Senate, so we all have wild schedules. We're all sort of, you know, married to our jobs, but I do, you know, try to get out there a few times a week. I teach a little bit of tennis.
Really? You still have time to teach?
Yeah. A little bit. I do it like twice a week when I can. And then my boyfriend actually works with me, but he's a sports reporter. So when I can, I hang out with him. We have like a very set Friday, Saturday schedule. We don't hang out during the week because we're too busy working. So it's, we all manage it. It's tough for, I think, a lot of people, especially in D.C. where it's so, you know, politically and work driven. But you have to make time to get off your phone at least a little bit and do something.
Yeah, or else you burn out. And I feel like definitely in tennis, I noticed like when I was happier, I played better. So I'm sure now, like when you're happier, you do a better job reporting. But Shelby, it was so awesome catching up with you. So excited to see how well you've been doing. And we definitely have to catch up again soon and hang out when you're back in town.
Yeah, thanks. I'm glad I did this. Thanks for having me.
Okay, seriously, how cool is she, guys? Don't sit there and tell me she's not so awesome. And don't get me wrong, she was super awesome tennis player, but now she's so cultured and well-respected and so good at what she does. I'm honestly so impressed and inspired by her efforts. She barely sleeps and she's just taking hard work to the next level. This girl, I swear she never sleeps. Whenever I'm on social media, she's always posting something and always reporting somewhere or recording something at some protest, getting tear gassed, getting attacked. I mean, this girl has got it all. Tennis has taken us both to, you know, the scariest third world countries. But like she said, working for the Daily Caller and doing stuff that she does is just some next level stuff. I hope this inspires you guys. Let's say tennis isn't going super well for you. I hope this inspires you that the skills you get from all your experiences will translate to any avenue of your life. So whether tennis works out or not, you are set for life. That should really just give you some motivation to keep grinding away and doing what you do best. But thanks for tuning in, guys. As always, follow me on Instagram and Twitter at Jules L. Baba, at JulesElBaba. If you like this episode, please subscribe, leave a review. Love to see your reviews.
So excited because I'll be covering the Western and Southern Open and the US Open. Finally, some live tennis that I could cover. I'm so excited to fill you guys in on all the coverage. If you have any questions or comments, please email me at JulesOnTheHustlePodcast@gmail.com. See you guys next time on Jules on the Hustle. Bye-bye.